All right, everybody, welcome to Lecture 22 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We're continuing with our story of archaic Egypt. And so today we're going to look at how the way that Egyptian life was organized first fell apart. And we're going to see that Egypt was never the same after that. The Egypt of the pyramid builders, that great peak, literally, of the pyramids at Giza, they never matched that ever again. And so we're going to see Egypt fall apart today. We're going to go through the history of how that happened. And we'll start to kind of get the ball rolling here on the remainder of Egyptian history, because we're not going to spend too much time on it, because we have another archaic civilization to look at side by side. One which, in the end, is going to conquer Egypt and be stronger than Egypt. So that's very interesting. We have to figure that one out. And then we'll see that that civilization also was surpassed by, finally, the ones that we are most interested in. First Greece and then Rome. So we're going in the order that history really gives us for this study here. And we need to see how Egypt, this society, this world of the pyramid builders, fell apart, and how it just could not keep going over time. So it did last a long time, of course, as we know, but basically what we're going to see is that it lasted there not particularly impressive reasons, just because there wasn't anybody else around, and there wasn't anything else that people could do, and just kind of coasted along for thousands of years. Try to imagine that life the same for thousands of years, and until finally it was swept aside. So let's take a look at this story here. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen with you guys, and let's just recapture the context by going to the class webpage. I'm just going to use the lower elementary class page because it's the simpler one. And I'm just going to point out to you guys that with the Lecture 21 resources, we have the most recent set of class notes. So I'm going to go ahead and bring those up on the screen here and just remind ourselves a few of the building blocks of our knowledge of ancient Egypt, okay, through these class notes here. And so in this new set of class notes, which definitely should be one of your projects this week to read and to review for yourself and to ask me any questions that you can if they arise, all right? Here in the class notes, we talk about the fact that the reason we study Egypt is because the Egyptians built the pyramids. Okay, and the pyramids were two things. Without looking, can anybody tell me what the two things were? And if you have to look, go ahead and look. And then tell me what the two things were. Opal, go ahead.
They were a monument and a tomb.
Okay. I probably would do it in the opposite order, although, you know, it doesn't matter too much. Everybody knows that they were tombs, and everybody talks about them as being tombs, but I think not enough attention is paid to the monument quality, which is really, really important. Why were they monuments? Okay, they were tombs. Okay, it has to do with the religion, but why were they monuments, Rosetta?
You could look at them because they're just standing there and you're looking at them.
Okay. And since you had to look at them on a daily basis, you were reminded of what?
The Pharaoh.
You're reminded of the Pharaoh, and in particular, what part of the Pharaoh's nature that was so important to the Pharaohs themselves as rulers? What did they want you to think?
A god.
Yeah, the Pharaoh was a god. I mean, we know how impressive the pyramids are. They were the tallest buildings in the world for thousands of years. Who could do such a thing? Well, we know that it took tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of slaves to do it. So not one individual person could ever construct such a thing. And there were some pretty fascinating people involved, I imagine, such as the architects who designed the pyramids. And so there were some really interesting characters back then. But really, when you look at them, it will never cease to amaze people that an ancient civilization could build something like that. So imagine the primitive people themselves living there and seeing the pyramids on a day-to-day basis. They would have had to have been very impressed by that and had to feel small, right? You know how people talk about how they feel small in the presence of certain great things. And that was the idea of the pyramid, was to make the people feel small, to make them feel like the pharaohs are great, that they are gods, and that they should continue to obey them and worship them. Okay? And, well, that was all connected to life on the Nile. Right? The fact that the Egyptians relied so much on the Nile in their lives, but they didn't know how it works. They didn't know how a river works. So how did they believe the Nile? What did they believe happened to the Nile every year? And they didn't have the Weather Channel to tell them, okay, everybody, the rains have begun in the rainforests of the equatorial region of Africa, and therefore, in a few weeks' time, all of that water is going to come down the Nile, and we're going to have a flood. Right? They didn't have the Weather Channel. What was their belief instead? When that water started to rise every year, like clockwork, as people say. Rosetta?
Didn't they think the gods made it happen?
They thought that the gods made it happen. And thus, if we have pharaohs who are gods, or the pharaohs have something to do with that as well, then we have to worship them and we have to obey them. Which is pretty tricky, though. How did the pharaohs make it so that as rulers, they certainly couldn't control the Nile, but what could the pharaohs do that would make them seem like good rulers? They couldn't control the Nile. Oh, and wow, is this ever a play on words? That would make them seem like good rulers. Anybody get my joke? Oh, I am just too funny. I'm on fire this morning. Come on. You guys aren't laughing because you don't get my joke? Wow, we were just doing a bunch of corny jokes yesterday, and this is perfect for it. What rulers am I talking about? They were rulers because they ruled people. What else do we use rulers for? Patrick, what do we use rulers for?
Measuring.
For measuring. Can you think of a ruler in ancient Egypt? A really big ruler? What was it called? You forgot. Opal?
That's not what I was answering.
Okay, try to pay attention to what I'm asking. Okay, what was the name of the ruler that was so important to the pharaohs? The Nilometer, right? The measuring stick of the Nile. They couldn't control the Nile, but they could tell what the floods would be like. And why was this so important? Well, we can see right here in the class notes. If there were good floods, what could the pharaohs do? Because they are the rulers of the people. All right, Opal.
Catch the people hiding.
Okay, right. As much as possible, right, without being tyrants, right? Because if you are a tyrant, you're going to get overthrown. So that was the key to it. Okay. But, all right, so now what we're going to get into much more in more detail today is the nature of Egyptian government. We know that we have the pharaohs, and they are pretending to be gods, and they are able to enslave tens of thousands of people to build pyramids. But we know that in order to make this work, they have to stay apart from everybody else. And we were kind of joking about this last week, that as human beings, they had all the normal human problems. And all the way, you know, from poopy diapers on up. And so that's not godly, right? That's human. And so, in order to appear as gods, they of course had to stay separate from everybody else and make sure that people didn't see them that way, and only show up very, very rarely on giant chariots like our character from the painting, and preside over ceremonies. Be this important character high up on the stage that nobody can touch, but that is so impressive and is wearing gold and very colorful outfits, and seems so impressive and surrounded by a giant army. And what's a normal person going to do, right? They really are. To them, it's impossible to imagine themselves like that. So there's this character that's so different and so powerful, and this is their pharaoh, their god king. But yesterday what we said was, it sounds impressive, it's kind of an amazing idea, very original, very interesting idea, but the truth is the pharaohs had to rely on other people in order to have their government. So we're going to now look at a diagram that I made to try to help everybody understand this. And the diagram will help some people more than others, I suspect. But depends on how much you know about European history and how much time you've spent with history at our house to be able to figure out this diagram. But what I did was, I made a diagram a while back for European history, which shows us the way that European society was organized. There was also a belief in God, but in that case, in the European society, we only have the idea of one God. And then what we had in the European Middle Ages was society was very simply organized. At the top, there were two leaders. There was a king who controlled, who had power over everybody. And then there was a religious leader, the Pope. And then beneath them was a set of ordered ranks, one above the other. Who's going to tell the name, the class, the name of that word? Very important key word for an organized group of things or people in ranks, one above the other. Great vocabulary word. Rosetta, go ahead.
I'm not sure if this is the right word, but monarchy?
No, monarchy is at the is the you know, the person at the top. It has a key at the end, but it's a different kind. Patrick?
Constitutional
Oh my
monarchy?
Goodness, no, that's constitutional monarchy. Oh my goodness, I see what you're trying to do there. No, that's not it either. So this is from last year, it's from year after year, so it's a tricky word. What is the name for any group of things or people organized in ranks one above the other? I'm a little disappointed some of my veterans are not leaping forward with this one here. The word is hierarchy. A hierarchy. I think Wyatt's probably kicking himself here. All right, so a hierarchy. So this is a hierarchy. These are two different hierarchies. Okay, an organized society with people in ranks, one above the other. Okay, and at the very bottom are the least important people. And at the very top, the most important ones. Okay, so this is how society was organized. We're going to focus mostly on the Egyptian side because not everybody knows very well how the European side works. So we'll focus mostly on the left here. But for those of you who are familiar with the one on the right, it can be very interesting to compare the two. For instance, what's very importantly different at the top? Right? Look across there. And what was at the top in the Egyptian hierarchy of the world, which is very different from the shape of the top in the European one? What's at the top in the Egyptian side?
Ra and the Egyptian gods.
Ra and the Egyptian gods. How's that different from Europe? How is that importantly different from Europe?
God.
Let's see. Wyatt, go ahead.
One side, it says Ra and the Egyptian gods, and there's a bunch of different things going up. on the Middle Ages side, it's just one.
Yeah, right. So at the top in Egyptian belief, there were many different gods. Ra was probably the top one at different times in history. It might be called Horus or have another name. Okay. And then we go down to the pharaoh. Now, this is another important difference. That in European society, you had somebody that was ruling over the kingdom and somebody that was in charge of the religion. But in Egyptian society, we really only have one character there. We really only have one person who is both the leader of the society and the leader of the religion. But as we talked about yesterday, there's a character just underneath. So, remind me, why do we have this character here, the vizier? What was his job in this arrangement? Julia, go ahead.
He was the one who, actually ruled, but they said that the pharaoh ruled.
Okay, why do you say he actually ruled? Because everybody would say, yeah, that, like you said, the pharaoh ruled. But you're saying that he actually ruled. What do you mean? What's the difference there?
He made the vizier made the big decisions, and the pharaoh just pretends that he said them.
I think that might have happened on occasion, okay? But the thing is, the vizier is the one who actually handles the business, who actually passes on the orders, who actually talks to all the other folks that are not supposed to have direct contact with the pharaoh. So, the situation is that how do we know whether or not the pharaoh said something or not? Who's the only person that's going to be able to tell us? Well, in some cases, right, if we're really important people like the queen, we'll talk to the pharaoh. If we're really important people like the high priest, maybe we can talk to the pharaoh and make sure, right? If we're really important people, maybe we can talk to him. But not everybody can do that. And the arrangement was that the vizier has to be in charge of the practical day-to-day business. Opal, put your hand down unless you have something else. So, that creates a problem in this system. Okay? Because, as Julia was kind of hinting at here, there's one guy that's supposed to have the power, but in a lot of ways, there's another guy that actually has the power. Because everything goes through him. So he can change the orders maybe just a little bit. Or he can make a lot of decisions and do things. Of course, if he lies, well, what's going to happen? Pretty tricky situation for him too, right? Because if the vizier lies to the lords and gives them a different order than what the pharaoh said. Just like any time when you lie, what might happen? Rosetta?
You might get in trouble, well, or so, the pharaoh, in that case, you might get killed.
Well, yeah, right. Getting in trouble with the pharaoh is gonna be worse than getting in trouble with mom or dad, right? So, yeah, in that case, it could be, right? If somebody could find out the truth. That's the point I was trying to make, right? If you lie, well, you know that you are trying to cheat the truth, and that doesn't work well. And so that's the trick. The vizier did have some power, but the pharaoh was there and he might find out. So pretty tricky position to be in. Okay. But we can imagine a situation in which the pharaoh and the vizier, well, the scales, or what would be a good way to put this? The vizier might be more powerful than the pharaoh. So who can think of examples or cases where the vizier, you know, in a real life situation where the vizier might be more powerful than the pharaoh? When would this arrangement not work? Where the pharaoh passes on the orders and the vizier just does what he's told. When would you be able to maybe change that arrangement? Rosetta, what do you think?
Well, I was thinking if there's a really weak king.
If there's a really weak pharaoh, good. And weak in this case, Rosetta, do you mean physically weak?
No, I just. Well, yes.
Maybe, okay, maybe, but you did mean something else, so go ahead and explain it. What else? What would be the another way to say a weak king?
A weak king, not very powerful king. It couldn't. He couldn't really.
Hmm, let's help you. Rosetta, you got us started here. So let's see if the rest of the team here can help make this a little bit stronger. What would be other ways in which a king could be weak, everybody? A pharaoh. And then the vizier would be superior to him in some way. What would be other types of weakness other than physical weakness? What are other kinds of weakness? What do you have to do to be a pharaoh? I can think of two at least. What are other kinds of weakness other than physical weakness? Nobody can think of that? Okay, Rosetta's gonna try again. Go ahead.
Well, the vizier, he might know that he's not a god king, and that could.
Oh, yeah, well, he certainly would. So that's always going to be the case. But there's an arrangement here where the vizier gets to be pretty much second in command of the world, and it's very powerful. So he's willing to make that bargain. Okay? He gets to have, in some ways, the best position in the world because he's the one with the real power. But what I meant was, how could we get into a situation where this kind of gets flipped? Right, where the vizier is going to be truly in, better than the pharaoh or superior to the pharaoh. What are ways in which one person can be better than another or stronger than another, but not in a physical sense? Geez, I'm fine. I'm kind of surprised. I got you guys stumped here. Okay, how about intelligence? Who can maybe run with that one a little bit? Talk to me about how intelligence would be an important factor in the pharaoh and the vizier's relationship. I don't know if Rosetta, you're still trying to answer that. Put your hand down unless you are. Opal, go ahead.
Maybe the pharaoh is not very smart about it and is letting, I don't know. Or maybe he doesn't know something that the vizier heard and he didn't tell the pharaoh or.
Okay, you're on the right track. What if the pharaoh is stupid? All right, I'm just gonna be blatant here because you guys need a little kick. All right, what if the pharaoh is not very smart? Right? I mean, this happens. What if the vizier, who has a really tough job, is really clever and really conniving and really smart? Then, who's gonna be the top person in that relationship? Who's going to be able to trick the other person into doing things that are stupid, or so on and so forth, right? Rosetta, I know you're asked, that was a rhetorical question, right? If the vizier is a much more intelligent, much more conniving person, he's going to be able to trick the pharaoh, right? All right, we got that. All right, we have other features of people's, not just their physical strength or their mental strength. There's different kinds of people in the world, right? Some people are great leaders. Others are not. So sometimes we call that charisma or leadership quality, right? And so a pharaoh who doesn't have that is not going to really know how to act, how to be a ruler. How to pass on the orders, how to have a presence that everybody believes in and so on, so that he can be in charge. So there are a lot of cases where the pharaohs and the viziers might get into an arrangement where the viziers are better than the pharaohs, are stronger than the pharaohs, can trick the pharaohs, whatever, might decide that they want to take over. And we're going to talk about that situation right now. Because at the end of the Age of Pyramids, there was a pharaoh, and I really love this pharaoh's name. His name was Pepi. There was a pharaoh named Pepi II. Now, I imagine that's probably, I don't know if that was an Egyptian name, and sometimes our translations of ancient Egyptian words are kind of wacky these days. But who knows? So I like to, Pepi II was the pharaoh's name. He was the last of the pharaohs of the age of pyramids. I don't even know if he got a pyramid. Probably not, because he lived to be 96 years old, according to Egyptian historians. All right, now everybody tell me, what's the problem? If we're living in this kind of arrangement, why is this going to be a situation in which there's a real problem in Egypt when the pharaoh is 96 years old? Wyatt, Henry.
Because the elements be like he flagged it, says the pharaoh is really old and gods can't get old.
Okay, that's one problem, right? How can the pharaoh really...
By that time, the pharaoh would have wrinkly skin and be really, really, and probably would only be able to see stuff if they were very close to him.
Yeah, right. He might have bad eyesight. He would be really frail. Okay. And what if he has a son who wants to take over? What if there's other people who want to take over, but they can't? And basically they have to wait for him to die. And this is very unusual, because in ancient times people didn't really die so late in life. So yeah, having a really old pharaoh would be a difficult situation, because everybody is very impatient for making arrangements that the next pharaoh is going to get in charge. And who is that going to be? And the longer that it goes, the more people are making what are called intrigues. An intrigue is some kind of, you know, trick, some kind of arrangement to try to take over power, some kind of, I'm only coming up with other more difficult words, like a conspiracy, in case anybody knows what that is. An arrangement to try to take over power, basically, right? To trick, to take power, because there's this weak pharaoh. And so what ended up happening in the rule of Pepi II, okay, so we have this situation where we have Pepi II, and he's a really, really old pharaoh, okay? And then imagine, all right, so that's already a bad situation. Now, what else? It appears that there was a time of drought. So what is that going to do to Egyptian life? What is a drought? Patrick, what's a drought? Not familiar with that word? Okay, pay attention to Rosetta's answer. Go ahead, Rosetta.
A drought is a long time where it hardly ever rains and water starts drying out.
Okay, so if there's no rain, what's going to happen to the Nile, Patrick?
It won't go higher up.
It won't go as high as people need. Okay, what will happen to people in Egypt if the Nile doesn't flood properly, as they expect and need?
They might get thirsty.
Not just thirsty. I mean, they don't get their water directly from the Nile. But the water from the Nile is used to do what?
To drink?
No, to grow food.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's not enough water,
they can't grow crops, no food.
Okay, so now you have a situation in which life in Egypt is really bad. And you have a situation where you have a weak pharaoh. This is really, you guys know the expression, a perfect storm, right? This is really a situation where everything's going wrong at once, right? Because when things go wrong, well, then you can say, well, it's because of the people and it's their fault. But when you have this pharaoh that's really weak, well, it's harder to say that. It's harder for the pharaoh to impress everybody else and to make sure that they will follow his rule. So now everybody's upset and you have this pharaoh that's really weak. So when did it end up happening? Well, it wasn't actually the viziers who made the trouble. So this is where we have to take a closer look here at the picture, right? Because we have the pharaoh and we have the viziers. And let's just bring up a map of Egypt here for a second. And let's imagine, because for the most part, okay, let's say that this is Upper and Lower Egypt really kind of close up. And let's imagine that, because it wasn't always this case, it wasn't always the case, but very often it was the case, that the pharaoh lived in Thebes. Okay? Now, it might not be the case for Pepi. They moved around, there were different capitals and so on. Okay? The pharaoh and the vizier are in Thebes. Okay? So, I said that the pharaoh has to use the vizier in order to give his orders. But does the vizier rule all of this on behalf of the pharaoh? Can you have one person in charge of a country? Would be another way to ask that question. How would it really work? Rosetta?
They probably had multiple people.
Multiple people underneath. I'm going to bring this back up. Okay? Back in Europe, the kings never ruled directly. And this was a big problem for the kings. They had lords underneath them called dukes and counts and barons and so on. There were different titles in different places. And some of you will remember that in European history, we talk about the problem of the dukes. Because the king is in his capital. And he needs them to control what's going on in the rest of the country. Okay, now let's look at ancient Egypt. The pharaoh and the vizier are in their capital, maybe Thebes. But in order to control the whole country, where everybody's far away from them, they need these other people. In ancient Egypt, the word that we have for the lords is the nomarchs. So their territories were called nomes, I believe. And they were called nomarchs. And so if life is really awful and there's a really weak pharaoh, well, that's one of those situations where you're going to have the people get upset. They're not going to be willing to follow the pharaoh anymore. And the nomarchs rebelled against Pepi II. Do we know the details? No. We only have so much information about archaic stories. So sometimes we have to fill in some of the details. But we know that the kind of problem that Egypt had was the same as problems everywhere else in primitive societies. That's why I put the European diagram and the Egyptian diagram side by side. Because the problem was the same. The problem was that the king was not out in the country. He had to rely on other people to control the country for him. These lords are nomarchs. So if he's really weak and life is really hard to organize, then at some point, these characters here decide we're going to rebel. And the pharaoh was overthrown. So with Pepi II, we have this situation where the arrangement doesn't work anymore. The nomarchs rebelled. And there was a period of chaos in Egypt. How bad was it? Well, there's an Egyptian historian named Manetho, and he wrote that there was a time following the rule of Pepi II in which there were 70 pharaohs in 70 days. So, do we believe him? I don't know. But, and it's probably some grand exaggeration. But what do you say? Let's kind of read between the lines here. 70 pharaohs in 70 days. What's he probably, maybe symbolically trying to say? What does that sound like to you? 70 pharaohs in 70 days. Let's not take it literally. What do you suppose it's kind of a poetic way of saying? Opal?
There's a new pharaoh every day.
Well,
but okay. They don't last very long.
Okay, good, right? Yeah, I like that expression. There's a new pharaoh every day. Okay, they didn't last very long. So, but why didn't they is kind of what I'm driving at here. Wyatt, Henry?
It's where every day, leadership, so like one of them would rise above the others and become the pharaoh.
All right.
But then, the other nomarchs would hurt them maybe in a few days. And then another one would conquer that pharaoh and rise above them.
All right, nice. Wyatt's got the mechanics, okay? Did everybody follow what Wyatt said here about the mechanics of 70 pharaohs in 70 days? There's a lot of nomarchs out there. We don't know the number, okay? And they're competing, right? Because this arrangement up here is not working. So who's going to be the next person in charge? Well, there's only so many possibilities, right? And these guys are actually in charge of local armies in different places in the country. So as Wyatt is saying, maybe they're making alliances with each other. They're fighting each other. It's called, what do we call that when the people within a country fight each other? What's the name for that kind of horrible chaos? Rosetta?
A civil war,
right, exactly. So following the reign of Pepi II, there seems to have been a civil war, and there seems to have been a long period. We'll see how long. We'll look at a timeline tomorrow. I'll give you kind of some details, just so you can get a really specific sense of how it all worked. There seemed to be a long period in which there was no pharaoh, in which this situation just fell apart completely. And so when there finally came to be pharaohs again, when there finally came to be one of these nomarchs, as it turns out, a vizier, who took charge once again and became the pharaoh, well, they had to try to figure out how to organize life in a slightly new way, right? Because, wow, that didn't work. There was a long period where Egypt fell apart. So we'll talk about how that happened and a little bit more detail of how this all works next time. Okay, good. I'm not going to post this diagram to the class webpage quite yet because it's pretty new and I might decide that I want to tweak it a little bit. So give me a little while before I post this and we'll discuss it more each day. And if there's a part of it you don't get, of course, make sure to ask. It'll become clearer and clearer as we talk about it more. And we'll get to this next phase of Egyptian history here as well. Okay, that's good, folks. Thank you. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.